This is Audible.
And now, part two of She is the Darkness, written by Glenn Cook, and read by Jonathan Davis.
Chapter 60. Goblin was almost impossible to find, despite there being crows wobbling all over above the south face of the Don Depresh. His handiwork was obvious, though. Anywhere that the locals were insane enough to cooperate with Mogaba, Goblin's band had pillaged and burned and made examples. Mogaba's troops had done the same to everyone dim enough to cooperate with Goblin or any of our allies. From a strictly practical, aftermath sort of viewpoint, it was impossible to tell who'd provided which instructional display. The locals did not seem to care who was fighting whom or why. They knew they did not see any good guys or bad guys anywhere. During the few minutes I took to dip around in time, I saw several villages and manors attacked. The nearer the present the violence occurred, the more likely its victims were to resist, whoever came calling. The four Valaka participated in some of Goblin's night raids. Crows came and went when she did, but a few always did so, even if the big cat was elsewhere. They visited Mogaba, too, apparently. Long Shadow had provided Mogaba with an arsenal of mystical objects capable of distracting a seeker like myself, of averting any other watching eye. But this wasn't getting me to what I wanted to see. I did take a moment to check in on Cordy Mather's party. Old Cordwood was on the south side of the Don Depresh now, moving slowly and moving at all only because the mountains remained incredibly inhospitable. Cordy didn't have crow trouble. That I could see. I was startled, though, to discover that a flock of the little monsters had nested amongst the crags and crumbles of the exterior of the palace at Trogotaglios. Though that should not have amazed me so on reflection. Events in the palace would be of particular interest to Soulcatcher, who liked to push her nose deep into everybody's business. I was too eager to visit the swamp, to waste time rooting around in the Radisha secrets. She is the darkness. She was still holding a lot of meetings with priests and leading men. Our books remained hidden where we left them. I was surprised that the Radisha was making no great effort to find Smoke anymore. I did not believe that she'd forgotten him. But I wanted to travel on. Bondo Trong should have had time to reach Sara. Oh, he had. He had. For the sheer power of the self-tantalization, I joined him late in his journey and followed him as he approached the Temple of Gangesha. Shortly before he reached the place, he stepped off the trail, which was just a raised path, meandering through swamp, converted to rice paddy, and took time to adopt a disguise using materials he'd brought along. A little more dirt, a change in the hang of his hair, the quick adoption of a raggedy orange robe, and he became a wandering mendicant of one of the Guni cults. Their vows of poverty missionaries went everywhere. Even the Nguyen Bao tolerated them. Their holiness was beyond question, however mad they might be as individuals. I've always found the religious tolerance of the Southerners amazing and disconcerting, though it was really only an ancient habit, predicated on the fact that no religious community was strong enough to show the rest the errors in their thinking at sword's point. Trong continued on his way. He did the mendicant part very well. I think he may have played it before, maybe while first visiting Taglios. Yueng Bao weren't welcomed warmly there. They were too arrogant a minority. No matter. Trong was admitted to the temple. The older priests seemed to know.